So I felt kind of bad titling this sermon with the provocative title, God is Not One. Did any of you see that and think, what does she mean by that? It's not my title, but that of a book by religion scholar Stephen Prothero. I felt particularly bad about this title because the opposite statement, God is One, is a famous statement by one of our cherished Unitarian ancestors and martyrs, Francis David. But he was speaking in reference to the Christian Trinity. When I speak of God is not one, I am referencing the statement often heard by well-meaning people. You've heard it, maybe you've said it, that all religions are really the same. As one common analogy puts it, all religious and spiritual paths are simply different routes up the same mountain to the same peak. We heard this statement in our responsive reading I chose for today that we just read. It comes from the back of our hymnal. It says, in temperament we differ, yet we are dedicated to one august destiny. Creeds divide us, but we share a common quest. An eternal verity abides beneath diversities. We are children of one great love. So these statements are usually well-meaning. They're about finding common ground in order to encourage cooperation and avoid warfare. Or on the other hand, they are about dismissing all religions as foolish at best and poisonous at worst. To that, I'd say that religions have been forces, yes, of evil, but also of great good. Fact is, religion is a force far too large and too powerful to ignore. More than 9 out of 10 Americans believe in God, even if they do not attend church. And with the notable exception of Western Europe, the rest of the world is furiously religious, as Stephen Prothero puts it. And religion is not just a personal matter, but affects economic, cultural, political, and social systems. And religion is not going away anytime soon. Islam's numbers have skyrocketed over the last century. Even if religion makes no sense to you, as Prothero says, you need to make sense of religion to make sense of the world. Rather than lumping all religions together in one trash can or treasure chest, we must start with a clear-eyed understanding, he says, of fundamental differences in belief and practice between Islam and Christianity, Confucianism and Hinduism. So this Stephen Prothero is what you would call a splitter. In all of life, there are lumpers and splitters. Lumpers, such as the popular religious scholar Karen Armstrong, see differences as surmountable, and they emphasize commonalities. Splitters, like Prothero, emphasize difference and complexity and resist simple schemes. Lumping and splitting each has its drawbacks. Lumping can often water things down to a point where there is no longer any meaning. Splitting can lead to unnecessary complexity and a failure to see similarities. So we need both. Today I'm emphasizing splitting, in part because I think as Unitarian Universalists, we can have a tendency, a well-meaning tendency, to assume that we all, even in this room, ultimately believe the same thing, when in truth there are significant differences among us, which we could greatly benefit from exploring. So this view that God is not one has within it a relish for diversity. The theologian Paul Nitta describes this preference for diversity. Whether you're talking about atoms, or molecules, or plants, or animals, or humans, or truths, you can't get away from diversity. Yes, different things can be interrelated, connected, and brought into unifying relationships, but never to the point you lose diversity. Diversity will always have the last word over unity. Otherwise, life and its evolution not only would get dull, but would wither away. Remove diversity, and you remove vitality. So when we ask that different religions come together on so-called common ground, we risk damaging important diversity. So just how different are the various religions? Just in terms of divinity, as you know probably, there is great diversity. Some believe in one God, or to complicate it, in the case of some Christians, a three-part God, or like the Catholics, one God but many saints. Most Buddhists and Jains believe in no God, and many pagans and Hindus believe in thousands of gods and goddesses. Is God a warrior, fierce like Hinduism's Kali, or a peace-loving wanderer like Jesus? Is God someone with whom you have a personal relationship? Philosopher of religion Ninian Smith talks about seven dimensions of religion. And each religion emphasizes a few dimensions over the others. So Christianity emphasizes the doctrinal. Taoism and Buddhism emphasize experience. For Hinduism and Jainism and Judaism, narrative. Islam and Yoruba, ritual. Confucianism, the ethical. Paganism, ritual. Yeah, others. There are many others. There are many practicing Jews who do not believe in God. So many religions will de-emphasize or even neglect one dimension. Get this, the Hindu's most sacred text is the Vedas, but rarely does a Hindu care about the meaning of the words. What matters is the sounds of the words and the sacred power they convey. Imagine that. So Stephen Prothero distinguishes between the religions based on their different conceptions of the problem that they see, the solution, and the technique to solve it. The technique for the solution. So I'm not going to go over each of those for each tradition, but I have a handout with all of them that I can print for you. So one example, Christians see sin as the problem, most Christians, and salvation from sin as the religious goal. Buddhists see suffering as the problem. And you could minimize that difference by saying that sin and suffering are really the same. But remember that for many Christians, suffering may draw you closer to God. And Jesus is in part worshipped for his embrace of suffering. But for Buddhists, liberation from suffering is the goal. And there is diversity within every religious tradition as well. There are some Christians who oppose this idea that God requires suffering. Even that God required Jesus' suffering for our salvation. But even these Christians are still very different from Buddhists, especially when you look at their differing approaches to solving the problem. The Buddhist concepts of no self and emptiness can be particularly difficult for Christians to comprehend. As for Islam, Islam advises Muslims on their secular as well as sacred life, seeing no separation between the two. There are instructions in the Quran, not only about ritual worship, but also about how to lend money, divide estates, and punish criminals. Yoruba is a religion originating in Africa. It's hard to estimate the number of Yoruba practitioners, but even conservative estimates of 100 million adherents place Yoruba among the world's top six religions. How many have heard of Yoruba? Right, just a few of us. handful, yeah. Yoruba is about remembering our individual destiny we have forgotten with the help of superhuman beings known as Orishas through the practices of divination, sacrifice, and spirit-body possession. To some of us, this may sound ridiculous or even frightening, but why? There may be just as odd practices or concepts in the traditions with which we are most familiar. And I say odd in terms of how others may view it. So God is not one, in part because we are not one. We are all humans, but our cultures are incredibly different. Saying that all religions are really the same is almost saying like our cultures are all really the same, or that there is one common language underneath all languages. Yet things are always lost in translation with language, right? Distinct languages have completely different alphabets, sounds, and structures. If we said that all religions are, say, about love and justice, not only would we be wrong, but we couldn't safely assume what love really means in other languages and cultures. Even nonverbal language is different in different cultures. The theologian George Lindbeck says that translating a word or concept from one religion into the language of another religion is like taking a mathematical formula and using it in poetry. So this brings us to postmodernism. Now don't go to sleep on me. Postmodernism, I think, is fascinating and will blow your mind. So postmodernism is suspicious of any truth claim that is seen as a capital T truth, even something as supposedly fact-based as science. Anytime a postmodernist meets a narrative that claims to be universal, she or he will deconstruct it and show how it is inherently shaped by one particular finite cultural filter. So in other words, we all have different lenses on the world. And the more we don't expose ourselves or try to other lenses, the harder it will be for us to see that we even have a lens on. Because it's all that we know. As the comparative religious scholar Max Müller said, "He who knows one knows none." If we aren't aware that we are inevitably seeing the world through a lens, then if we think we have identified common ground with someone, that common ground is probably more ours than common. We're still on our own turf. So postmodernists go even further to say that religions cannot all be describing the same experience in different words, which is a popular argument about the mystics of the different religions. Oh, well, the mystics all experienced the same thing. But the postmodernist would say, that can't be true because there is no real pure experience. The frameworks that we have for the world, language and images, actually determine the experiences that we have. So the frameworks that we have for the world determine the experiences that we have. In fact, we cannot have experiences without frameworks, they say. So according to this view, people of different religions do not diversely describe the same experience. Rather, they have different experiences. So if we are saying all of this about the religions, what can be said about what the religions are supposedly pointing to? The ultimate, or God, or meaning. So one theologian gives three possibilities. One, there's only one ultimate. Basically, one religion gets it right and the others just get it all wrong. Second option, there's only one ultimate, which is present equally in all religions. So this is like the analogy of the blind men who are all touching a different part of an elephant and thinking that that is the elephant. You heard that analogy? Okay, so here's number three, which might stretch your mind a bit, I don't know. There's a multiplicity of ultimates. So not in the sense that there are many gods necessarily, but that there is plurality within ultimate reality. A community of differences in relationship, which mirrors the way we have to be in the world, a community of differences in relationship. Also mirrors the idea that there might be multiple parallel universes. Also an idea that is hard to wrap our minds around. So in terms of what will happen in the future, centuries down the road with religion, one theologian believes that some religious competition is good. So listen to this statement from him and tell me whether you think he could be speaking of Unitarian Universalism. He says, "The inevitable but possibly fruitful form of competition among the faiths will consist in seeing which can most adequately take into account the distinctive testimony of others. The faith that proves able to do this for the widest possible range of compelling elements from other traditions will not only be enriched itself, but will offer strong warrants for its own truth. If there is to be any final prize in such a competition, it will go to the religion that can best call the other religions together." He's not, in fact, talking about Unitarian Universalists, but could he be? I don't agree that there should be one winner religion. I still stand with the value of diversity. But I do ask us, as a church that includes the diversity of many religions, how do we relate to that diversity? One image that arises is that of a neighborhood of diverse houses and backyards. I mean, not all the houses are houses. Some of them are teepees or caves. And around the backyards, good fences make good neighbors. So let's not take down our fences and build some religious commons that's meant to please everyone. Instead, what if we live into who we are in our particularities and lean over the fences to talk with one another? What if we became really open and curious about the unusual aromas of our neighbor's cooking or their odd habits in the middle of the night? And perhaps this listening will help us tend to our home better. Maybe by borrowing some of what we envy, but maybe also by becoming even more nuanced in and confident in our choices. And then let's all go to a town meeting together and discuss the diverse ways that we can understand and heal our beautiful but broken world. Because that's what we have in common, our beautiful and broken world. May it be so.